This is part two of a two-part message that I'm talking about, how to rebuild broken walls. Nehemiah chapter 2 and 3, we covered some parts of chapter 2. We'll revisit some sections of chapter 2. But before I get to that, we're learning lessons about what it means to live our lives with a sense of mission, a sense of purpose. And I was thinking how just this is not just a Christian thing. This is what it means to be a human being, what it means to be a creature, a created being of God thing. And I was thinking about just how important it is for us to remember that this sense that we ought to serve a larger and greater purpose than just for ourselves, than just for our own little small world, it's something that I think that is not something that only Christians feel, right? I was talking to someone and they were talking about how their hairstylist was, having this conversation with him. And I've had many conversations with haircutters for some reason. They find out you're a pastor and they want to talk to you about life. And you can't really, walk away or anything. And they got you there and they want to share with you about their life. And this woman was telling my friend about how, she felt like she was lacking purpose in her life. I was watching various clips that came up on my Google site that's trending, right? And one of the trending clips that came up for me was this interview that Louis C.K., a rather raunchy but very funny and sometimes insightful stand-up comic. How many of you guys know Louis C.K.? This is not an endorsement of his sense of humor, but he's funny. What can I say? And he's also very insightful. He was on an interview with Conan O'Brien, I think last week or a couple of weeks ago. Maybe some of you guys caught it. But then again, who watches Conan O'Brien nowadays? And he was talking about just how every one of us, one of the things that's a problem with his kids and this generation is that we don't know how to be still. We don't know how to just sit still and just be, because what happens when you sit still and just kind of let become aware, and he's talking about becoming a little bit more introspective, is that we start to sense that deep down inside there is emptiness. There's nothing that thing that could never be filled. And he says one of the ways in which our generation tries to become aware of that, or tries to avoid becoming aware of that, is by just, he says, you go like this, you text, because you start feeling this overwhelming sense of this angst at that life. Your life is just being wasted away, that there's this emptiness that cannot be filled on your own, right? And it's this incredibly Christian thing that he's saying, and he doesn't even know it. And he says, our generation, we're so uncomfortable with that. We get these momentary lapses of feeling we're okay by texting. I thought, yeah, that's incredibly insightful. Maybe the texting thing is not exactly that. Maybe there is not a direct correlation. But we do a lot of things to try to avoid feeling that sense of becoming aware of our need for something bigger than ourselves. Right? This life of mission, life of purpose, this is something that this is not an optional thing for us. Because as soon as we start thinking about it that way, we realize, I want that. It's not something that we think about it as an optional thing, but this is a real, real true thing. We want to talk about what it means to live our lives of a worthy mission. And we want to learn from the book of Nehemiah. And just as a recap, we learned that Nehemiah is a servant in the courts of the king of Persia, and he is among the exiled Jews under the Persian Empire. When he hears about the broken walls and the broken people, his broken people in Jerusalem, and the news breaks his heart, and he weeps for it, and he goes and prays for a month or 40 days. And he realizes that this is his life's mission. For 4 months he does, actually. And then this is his life's mission. So he willingly gives up everything that he has accumulated, that he has worked for, all the favors that he had built up all this time, to serve this purpose with his life, and he does not regret it. And this is a cool story because of that, and it's a very modern story because of that. He risks everything that he has ever worked for and goes to the city of Jerusalem to rebuild the broken walls. And again, broken walls are a lot more than just broken walls. It really is all that is trying to, all the images that come up about brokenness. Now, last week I said that taking on a project like this, taking on any worthy project in your life, taking on any worthy project in your life requires fierce resolve. Don't forget that, because you must remember this. If you're going to take on any worthy mission, any purpose, anything that is really worthy of your life, you're going to have to persevere. You're going to have tenacity. You're going to have to really, really resolve through and endure through the hardships and the opposition that will come your way. Now, today I want to talk about three other things that Nehemiah does to help us live our lives pursuing worthy missions that I see from chapter 2 and 3. Nehemiah first inspects, Nehemiah secondly inspires, and then Nehemiah gathers. So let's get into this. Nehemiah first inspects, and we saw this last week in verse 12. We're told that Nehemiah gets to Jerusalem, and the first thing he did was to arise at night. And with a few trusted companions, he carefully inspects the broken walls of Jerusalem. I had not told anyone what my God had put in my heart to do for Jerusalem, verse 12. There were no mounts with me except the one that I was riding on. And then he reminds us, even before he told anybody else, any of the officials, any of the people of the city, he spends time looking at the walls. The officials did not know where I'd gone or what I was doing, because I had not yet said anything to the Jews or the priests or the nobles or the officials or any others who would be doing the work. Verse 17. A couple of observations about what this inspection is about, or how he does this. First, he does this directly. I point that out because Nehemiah could have simply sent out some subordinates. He could rely on the reports of others. That would have been probably the normal protocol. But instead, he feels that he needs to see this for himself. Instead, he says, I need to go and see the walls for myself. And second, he inspects the walls carefully. He inspects the walls very, very carefully. They are taking notes. You know this, right? In verse 12, verse 13 and 15, it talks about how he went through. And he has this exacting detail. Remember I told you about Nehemiah is a little bit uptight, and he's like a bureaucrat, and he writes down all of these details? Meaning, did you get the sense that he might be a bureaucrat? And he doesn't want to get anything wrong. Right? He's exacting details. They examined the valley gate and the jackal well and the dung gate, which had been broken down, and the gates were broken down by fire. Then he moved to the fountain of fate, the king's pool. And then he finds out that the damage is such that they could not go through certain sections, so he circles back to the valley. He tells you all of this about his night trip. Exacting details. He's taking notes. They're taking notes. And secondly, because they do this at night, I know that they had to do this. They must have had to do this very closely, very carefully, very closely. Because they don't have flashlights. They're not driving around with cars with high beams. They have torches, right? I don't know what they use. Lanterns, torches, but they walked around like this probably with torches, looking at the walls very, very closely, dimly lit. Why? Why waste time inspecting obviously broken walls that's been broken for decades or at least for years? Then nobody would have argued with them about how it was. I mean, everybody acknowledged that they were broken. Because Nehemiah knows that you can't rebuild or repair anything without first making an honest assessment of the extent of the damage. Certain sections of the wall may look fine, but upon close inspection, it's a different story. And that's, I think, one of the first lessons that we need to learn here. That if we're serious about the rebuilding campaign of God, if we're serious about pursuing God's calling, then we need to really do a hard work of inspecting. Here's what I think means for us, especially as a church, because if you think about this, this is not an individual project. This is not just Nehemiah's project. This is a group project. In other words, this is a church project. You get why this is so relevant for us? Nehemiah, honestly inspecting the broken walls of our lives, of our church, it's essential to strengthening God's people, to God's church. We will never be strong as God's people if we're unwilling to admit where we are weak. Part of what it means to be Christians is that we can't just celebrate when things are strong. But instead, we also have to be willing to walk the walls and humbly and honestly ask the question, what do we see here? And sometimes the answers are not things that you will like. It is one of the scariest things that you can possibly do. One of the most helpful things, one of the most building things that you can do for yourself to ask someone that you trust, what do you see with me? Because we go through life most of the time avoiding that situation. We don't want that sort of attention on us. We want to make sure even those people that are closest to us, they might look at us, but they look at the parts that we want them to see, but not the parts that we don't want them to see. Anybody know, like, how many of you guys, like, Superman comic book fans? No? Or super, like, comic book heroes, Batman and Captain America, right? So, okay, you guys know, I worked at Marvel Comics for when way back in high school, I interned my college years. You get basically made lots of copies. But it's still kind of cool because you're making copies of original art. And back then, you know, making copies was kind of like it was like skilled labor, right? So, because copy machines would like break down every like five copies or so. But there was this thing, and they would always talk about, like, why does Captain America carry such a, you know, he carries a shield with a big, gigantic A, and it's got a little target. Why does it look like that? And it's like, he does it on purpose. He does it so that when people shoot, they automatically, instead of, like, aiming for, like, his head or the rest of his body, they go, oh, I'm going to shoot at that target. His, you know, invincible shield, you know. Why does Batman wear, you know, big thing with a little bat right in the middle? Because instead of right at his chin when it's exposed. And the idea is, you know, and he says this. He says, you know, I want them to hit me there because that's where there's a bulletproof protection and all that stuff. So we do a lot of things, right? But we do that ourselves where we try to focus people's attention to certain parts. If you feel confident about your intelligence, but you don't feel confident about your athletic ability, then you focus on trying to have intellectual conversations on things that are important to you. If you feel confident about your body, but then you get really, you lack confidence in your ability to communicate, then what are you going to do? You're not going to talk as much. You're going to make sure that you dress as nicely as possible. We focus our attention on our strengths. We do this all the time. And we make sure that people try to not focus on our weaknesses. This is hard. So one of the hardest questions that you can possibly ask of a loving friend is to ask, honestly, tell me, when you see and when you look in my life, what do you see? And you ask the wrong person, they'll be like scared to tell you. because this is such an awkward thing that we're just not used to doing. So my entire life has been about not saying things that, you know, point out real truth to people. And when people do tell you and you're somehow developed, and many of us, we do develop some of these relationships sometimes, and those moments in which somebody's able to tell you a weakness, a flaw in your life, even as you appreciate it, even when that person does it well, you appreciate it, right? You really do. But it's an incredibly humbling, humbling experience. It's an incredibly hard and painful and humbling thing to do. So it's much easier, in fact, to inspect other people's walls rather than the ones that are closest to you, right? To inspect your own walls is even harder. To inspect the walls of your own church sometimes is hard. It's a lot easier for us as a church to, I know it is for me, and I think it is for you guys as well, to criticize other churches and other people. But what if we learned to inspect our own walls, ourselves, our church, as an act of love? Truly as an act of love, as an act of health. So you guys got the, I think most of you guys got the email from me. If you guys don't know, we will be having a forum later today on our possible merger. On our possible merger, nothing is set. And one of the questions that I've been asking all of you, one of the questions that I've been asking people as I run into these conversations with you in the past couple of weeks is to ask, first, what is one thing that you would want to make sure that we continue to do as a church? What are certain things that you want to make sure that we continue to do? That through hard-earned lessons, through a lot of prayer and tears, what are some things that you would want to make sure that we continue to do? It could be big, it could be small, it could be concrete, it could be abstract. The other question that I've been asking, though, is this wall inspection thing. What is something that we're struggling with? What is something that's broken in our church? In other words, walking the walls. Where is our strength, but where is our weakness? Where are we failing? The first question, in one sense, is easy. The second question is hard. Not because we think we're perfect, but because it is painful to look inward like that. I mentioned this to someone, and they misunderstood me as saying something like, we must be an unhealthy church or have so much problems that therefore we must have struggles. No, this has nothing to do with whether we're a healthy or an unhealthy church, but to be a healthy church for sure is to ask this hard question of ourselves. Think about it like this. As a parent, I worry about my kids. I think other parents would agree, you worry about your kids. You just kind of do, right? So it doesn't matter what they do right, what they do wrong, you just worry about your kids. And if you're, if you have parents, we all do, they always say, I worry about you. For whatever reason, it could be a good reason or a bad reason, a lame reason or a real reason, but we all worry about our kids. And I think in one part, for me, is because I sense and I realize there's a certain weakness in my child. There's a certain way. There are certain ways in which they may need help. Whatever it is, you know. You kind of wish that you want to help them. Is it a more loving thing to do as a parent to be in denial of your child's flaws, or to acknowledge your child's flaws? Right? Because if you're in denial, you can never do anything about it until it just breaks down eventually. Just kind of hoping that they won't run into that situation that might expose their weakness or a problem. You know? But if you acknowledge that and become aware of it and talk about it with your kids, then you could do something about it. Maybe you might not be able to fix it. Maybe it's not something for you to fix. But you come to a place of acceptance and not be in a place of denial. As a Christian, and this is one thing why the inspection part gets actually the lengthiest treatment today, it is so much easier to be in denial about our flaws. Personally, I know it's so much easier to be in denial about my flaws. And I think most of us are wired like that, right? I remember, and indulge me a little bit as I reminisce about my high school years, but I remember as I thought about denial, what are some silly ways in which we go through denial? But I remember when I was in high school, I rarely struggled with bad skin. Okay, let me just tell you that. I had very good skin. I was blessed with good skin. Not so much anymore, but I did. But every once in a while, because I'm a teenager at that time, I would break out with a zit. And for whatever reason, almost always this pimple would appear right in the center of my nose. Right? It was just a... Its presence would be even more emphatic because the rest of my skin was so clear. And you know, you just can't, no matter how much you try, not go to school because you have a zit. You have a pimple. And so the entire day that you're in school, and some of you guys may remember times like this, the first thing that you do is, or the entire day in school, you're hoping that people don't notice. Right? Which is like, if you think about it, you just go, really? Is that even a possibility? If you ran into some blind people, maybe. But seriously, do you really think that's a possibility? And you walk into your room and you know, you might even notice somebody doing a little double take. Or they when you talk to them, they're kind of like a little cross-eyed, you know? Or the other thing is they'll look at everywhere else except the area, right? And which is funny because for whatever reason, even as this is happening, I remember thinking, whatever reason, you're thinking, oh, I hope they don't notice, right? And finally, sometimes, once in a while, I'll get so uncomfortable, I'll even like fess up to it because it is like the elephant in the room. It's like, do you see the elephant on my nose? And I'll mention to someone about the giant pimple. And you know what's hilarious is that sometimes I'll say this and people will actually respond back. What do they say? It's like, oh, I didn't even notice. Right? How many of you guys are ever guilty of saying something like that? Right? And you will actually believe them. It's amazing. You know what happens when you're in denial about a flaw or a weakness or a problem and you keep doing it for the long term? There comes a point at which you no longer notice. Until you no longer notice. Other people may. But you're almost unable to hear other people's critiques of it. Becomes such a part of you that you almost lose the ability to do anything about it, and eventually the problems actually do some major damage. It's amazing to me how much broken walls that we can get used to and no longer notice. So one of the hard work of rebuilding the walls is to inspect. And it's crucial that we remember as we do the inspection, if we're doing this to do this right, that we have to remember that Nehemiah inspected for the purposes of rebuilding. He didn't just inspect, he inspected for the purposes of rebuilding. He wasn't inspecting to demean or to be critical. He wasn't doing this to complain or to gripe. Nehemiah was doing this so that he could rebuild. And it's such a huge difference, isn't it, when somebody talks to you in such a way versus when somebody just points out your flaws and kind of acts like, when it comes to the time of coming up with a solution, they feel like it's somebody else's responsibility, right? It's not wrong to see weaknesses and problems in a church or in each other. The question is, what is the purpose of our inspection? Is it to tear down or is it to build up? You may not have the answers, but are you willing to be part of the solution, willing to give your resources and your time, pray and serve? So maybe we've settled on certain things in our church that we need to lovingly discuss and lovingly bring up. And that's what I would love for us to do and use this as an opportunity to do. Maybe we settle for certain types of relationships and roles in our church that we need to challenge. Maybe there are certain sins and attitudes or unholiness that we're tolerating too much. Maybe we're a lot less grace-giving than we'd like to think we are. What are we doing well? But more, just as importantly, what are we struggling with? One of the things that I think, for me, even if our merger discussion goes no further than gives us the opportunity to think, inspect ourselves, I think there's an incredible benefit, incredible grace in that. So I want to, that's why in one sense, whether or not the merger happens, for me, this discussion is a good, good thing for us to have. So this part of thinking about who we are and what's good and what's precious, as well as what are the weaknesses that we have been in denial about, that is a wonderful, wonderful opportunity that I want to take, up and seize the opportunity. So the first thing that Nehemiah does is to inspect the walls. The second thing that he does is he inspires. He gathers everyone together, verse 17, and he gives what must have been this incredible rousing speech and rallies the people. And I would like for you guys to just listen and listen for the pronouns that he uses here. He says, "You see the trouble that we are in. Jerusalem lies in ruins and its gates have been burned with fire. Come, let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem." It is not your trouble. He says, it's our trouble, it's our problem. It's not you do something, but rather, come, let us rebuild. And you have to understand how hard this message, this rallying cry must have been to the people in Jerusalem. Because for years, the residents of Jerusalem have learned to live with the broken walls. And they probably don't even notice it anymore. And it's almost a sore spot for somebody to point it out. And this wasn't the first time someone came up to them and said, we're going to do a rebuilding thing. Only to wind up with walls that were in worse shape than even before. But Nehemiah inspires them because he lets them know. He lets them know because he's rolling up his sleeves as he does this. And his name is one of the names that's listed among the people who helped rebuild the wall. It says, I am in this with you. We are in this together because God is in this. And then when they see this in Nehemiah, they respond in verse 18. Look at this statement. It says, let us rise. And all the people come up. And I bet you they stood up as they were saying this. They let us rise and rebuild. Let us rise and build this thing, they say. And I don't know if you can relate to this sense of a call, when the call of God becomes clear in your life and it rises in your heart and you realize God can use you and you realize God can do this with you. And somehow now you find yourself standing before God, crying out these words with others standing next to you all of a sudden. And you realize you're saying, let us rise up. Let's do this. We can do this. We can do this because God is in this. And you know what is really, really cool about this entire thing? Is that Nehemiah was not trained as a preacher or a general or a motivational speaker. He was not even their elected official. He was not even the mayor or the district leader. None of these things. He was a stranger to them. And his profession was as a cupbearer, a bureaucrat at best, who loves to write notes of everything that happens. All he was a guy that wept at the plight of God's people and felt called by God to do something about it. But Nehemiah inspired the people with his commitment to the cause. And to God's commitment. God's promise. Folks, whenever we answer God's call, when you answer God's call, whether it's big or small in your life, when you answer God's call to do something, to serve Him in this life, in a big way or a small way, however ordinary, we influence other people to do the same. You guys know that? You have that impact when you say yes to God's call? That's what you do whenever you answer the call. Esther mentioned to me very briefly what the woman did in the last Bible study, asking the question of what makes you weep? What is tugging at your heart? What's going to be your cause? I have to tell you, just that in itself, just that sense that we're asking this question of ourselves, that people are actually taking this question seriously, that inspires me, right? I get goosebumps when I hear you, however small, however ordinary, however just seemingly you might think, it's just such a small thing that I can do. Whenever you say yes to God's call, it inspires me. When we answer God's call in our lives to serve a purpose greater than our own, we inspire others to do the same. So the question that we have to be asking is, who are we inspiring with our life? And did you know that you can? Did you know that you can? This is a real cool thing that Nehemiah does. Not because he's such a great speaker, but simply because he is committed. He is in this. And when people see that, they're inspired by him. So Nehemiah inspects, then he inspires, and then Nehemiah gathers. We finally get to chapter 3. Mia. I know I could have made you read the entirety of chapter 3 all the way to verse 32, but chapter 3 is mainly the list. People rise up, right? They listen, and people rise up, and they start the work of building. Now, how many of you guys, as you guys heard Myung read chapter 3, felt like she might have missed a chapter? Like she got... Like, she's reading the wrong thing. I mean, how do you get a message out of that? How many people zoned out? Be honest now. Come on. Thank you. It's like reading a book of reject baby names, right? And if you were ever, and now be honest also, if you've ever read through the entire Bible and you get to Nehemiah, this is one of those chapters where you skim through, right? Or you do speed reading. I mean, does that even work, you know, doing this? But that's what you would do in this section. Here is what I want you to see. And you will see this, I think, with me in the details. The work of God will not be accomplished unless every member of his church find themselves doing a part in the greater work of God. Okay. It's not just about a few talented people, a few leaders who are equipped, but it's every member of the body. It's not just about men. It's not just about women. It's not just about old people or young people. It's not just about people in a certain age group. It's every member of the body doing the work of God, each doing the work of God in their own way, finding themselves doing a part in the greater work of God. The picture we see in this chapter is all sorts of people with all sorts of different backgrounds, different talents, different places, coming together to serve this one purpose, to build up this wall, to build up the people of God. And what this means is that we all, every single one of us, each one of us, need to take up our place on the wall. Wherever we are in our lives, whatever we might think our gifts and talents might be. Look at the diversity here. Did you guys notice some of the job descriptions? These normal, I know you didn't, you went, wah, 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 wah. Okay. But if you look, anybody notice some of the jobs that are represented, the people, the professions that are in here? They're like, doctors and lawyers and teachers. I mean, they're essentially the equivalents. You got the priests, right? Priests. I mean, like the pastors, right? They have soft hands. What do they know about construction, right? They're putting up these big, gigantic boulders into these walls. Civic leaders. You have farmers. You have merchants. Did you guys notice the goldsmiths? It's not just a Jewish name. It's the actual goldsmiths. And then, this is one of my favorite, in verse 8. Anybody notice this guy? Hananiah, the perfume makers. The perfume makers, folks. What does a perfume maker know about construction work? I mean, I just have a lot of questions when I ran into that. And I had to read it like several times. I had to have a commentator actually point it out because I didn't notice it the first time. There's this guy who's a perfume maker, and there's like entire perfume maker guild. I just have lots of questions about the perfume makers and their section of the wall. I mean, did it smell nicer than all the other walls? Did they give out samples? Did they spray samples on people that were like, oh, it's kind of musky, you know? And this is the real question that I really want to ask, is that did it occur to anyone to assign the perfume makers to the dung gate? This is why, like, I'm reading the Bible in Nehemiah chapter 3. I'm chuckling, right? And we're, that's funny. There's some good stuff in here. And then verse 12 also talks about, look, Shalom repaired the section with the help of his daughters. Shalom repaired the section with the help of his daughters. And I get that because, like, my daughter is much stronger than my son, and she's a lot more helpful. So it would have been like Jin repaired the section with the help of his daughter while his son played some goofy games on the side. Men and women coming together to make the wall strong, and men and women are called together to make this wall for the purposes of God. Different people, different gifts, working on different parts of the wall for the single purpose, all edifying the people of God. That's one of the things that I want to point out. Another picture that you see in chapter 3. We read that some of the people worked on parts of the wall that were across from their house. In verse 28 through 30, I didn't make Miang read that part. She could do this on her own later on if she really wants to. Some of them, you know, they fixed the walls that were across from their house, next to their house, in front of their house, which makes sense, right? That's where I might be interested in making sure that the wall is built up good, and there's nothing wrong with that. But you also have these people who are building the wall coming in from nearby towns, from Jericho, from Tekoa, from Gibeon, who didn't even live in the city. What good is that going to do for them? What good is this wall going to do for them? So one commentator observes that we should be a church. What this means is that we should be a church that learns to build up the church even when a ministry has no direct benefit to us. We ought to think bigger about what we're doing when we're building up a church. We ought to not feel at all like something's lost if we were to send away a large portion of our funds to help support missionaries doing work in Arizona or in South Africa. That what happens at their part of the wall is just as important as what happens at our part of the wall here. And also within the context of our own church, that means that we should care about building up the ministries, even within our church, even if that ministry has no direct impact on you or your family. I think we do this kind of, on some level, I know we do this kind of well at our church. I think this is one of the things that we get. So that means even if you don't have young kids, you should care. Not just care from a distance, but say, I really want to support. I really want to help to make sure that children's ministry at our church is being good, because that's part of a wall that I might not benefit from right away because I don't have kids. I might not even be married, but that's still a part of God's wall. I'm going to be concerned about that. Or maybe you have young kids, but you don't have any teens, and you plan on having your kids grow up to be teenagers. But it is right for you to care about what happens to the youth. So one of the announcements I read was that the youth group is going to have their Halloween party at Gene's house. You know? Gene's no teenager. And you know in his mind, the last thing he wants is for Sophia to grow up any faster than she is. In fact, he wants to slow that down. You just know, you could just tell by the smile on his face every time he looks at Sophia. But that's a right way of thinking about it. That's a good way of thinking about it. Even if there's no direct benefit to you, you love the whole church and you're concerned about all the various ministries. It is wonderful to hear from all of you. And maybe we can share with one another the challenges and the causes that God is putting on your heart about how to serve Him with your life, even as you're asking that question. It is right for you, it's important for you to share that with other people, even if you think, what could possibly concern them about this? You know? We want to support that. We want to be part of that. There is nothing wrong with building a wall that is right in front of your house. There is nothing wrong for women to be passionate about women's ministry. But this shows that we need to have heart for the entire wall as well. For men to be concerned about women's ministry. And for women to be concerned about men's ministry. Isn't that just an incredible picture that you see in Nehemiah chapter 3 of how the church of God is supposed to look like? It's supposed to operate? And I was thinking, this picture gives me a different understanding, different picture about how we ought to think about the merger. Because I think sometimes we think the primary question when we ask ourselves about the merger, when we talk about the merger, is this question of how will this merger benefit us? And I think just about everything in our culture, and it's not a bad question, but it's just, I don't think, should be the driving question. I realized as I was preparing this message, it shouldn't be our first question. I think this chapter reminds us that the question that we should be asking is, how might this merger benefit the kingdom of God? And I think that takes us to different places and different ways of thinking about, different clarity on how we ought to be thinking about this. Because ultimately, if you think about the image of the wall, folks, it is only as useful. A wall is only as useful as its weakest point. Right? It's like nobody says, look at my beautiful fence. It is just, I mean, it's incredible. But and somebody points out and says, well, what about that little section? You got to open it then. Well, but the rest of it is wonderful. But that little section, you know, the rabbits are coming in and out, you know. Well, it's okay. But they're eating your carrots. I don't know why you're growing carrots, but it's a wonderful, wonderful picture. When we understand that the entire wall, the health of the entire wall, is what we ought to be concerned about, not just our little section. When we realize we're building something together, also then you realize what you do passionately in serving God's call, that matters, not just to you, and not just to the people that you benefit, but it benefits the entire church as well. And I want for us to understand why we ought to celebrate each other's call, and each other's service, and each other's faithfulness in building up our portion that God has called us to build up. We are in this together because God says He is in this. And God says we can do this because He promises us to be in this with us. So let us rise up and build. Let's pray. God, we thank you so much for giving us an awareness and helping us to ask questions about what it means to serve your purpose, that we are indeed placed in this earth to do this, to serve you. God, we love you so much for thinking that we are actually useful to you. May we passionately serve your kingdom with our lives. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.